I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
As a black person in this country, now you have to be very careful and try and move very carefully.
I don't think many black people, black English people, migrants will forget what's happened. I think that maybe some will reconcile, but it won't be on the terms that people think it will be on. I think the main change will come from people supporting the necessary businesses that they enjoy. I think generating financial capital for black-owned businesses would be something that would help, you know, the black community grow.
Since our status quo is ever-changing, Scott and I wanted to directly address what's going on in our world more often.
Yes, status quo is a thing of the past.
So true. We started in April with our COVID Warrior series.
We had no idea how well that would do. We actually high-fived each other when we saw how many downloads we got that first week.
And while you may not see Scott and I out there protesting, because honestly, we have a lot of respect for this virus,
Yeah. We
do want to make sure that we lend our voices to yours. We are so inspired by all of you.
And as always, we want to bring you all kinds of different experiences from different points of view.
A few weeks ago, someone brilliant said, "Stop looking for the new normal. That ship has sailed. All we have is what's happening now." So Scott and I named this new Thursday edition of The Only One in the Room the Now Normal.
So some Thursdays you might hear from a COVID warrior. Some Thursdays it might be all about race relations. And other Thursdays, who knows? We're going to keep it fluid for a while. But you can expect a new episode from us every week, as long as everything continues to change.
And don't forget to tune in every Tuesday when we bring you a brand new, amazing Only One in the Room story from one of our absolutely incredible guests. Enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show.
I am Laura Cathcart-Robbins, and this is the Only One in the Room special, the Now Normal series. But I am never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, Hun. So when the Black Lives Matter protests seem to be finding, they seem to be finding a more peaceful groove here in the States, right?
Yeah.
But BLM protests are really just ramping up around the world. And in London, More than 130 people have been arrested during the almost 200 demonstrations across Britain since the murder of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer. Statues in Parliament Square have been boarded up in preparation for thousands of demonstrators expected to flood the area on Saturday. Today we have with us our favorite brothers, Sammy and Don of the Family Podcast in London, who just this past Sunday released their first episode since March 22nd of this year, because like so many others, they had been sidelined by COVID. Their latest episode was called George Floyd, Let's Talk About It, and we are thrilled to welcome them to the only one in the room, the now normal. So welcome, guys.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hi. Who's that? You have to say your name when you say hi.
So my name is Sammy. I'm the older brother and I'm the creator, I guess, and co-host of the Family Podcast.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. And Don?
Uh-oh. Don, are you there?
Do we lose Don?
We might have.
No, I'm back.
Okay, good. Oh,
hey, Don.
Hey, Don. Yes. Hey. We just wanted to make sure we had a name to go with your voice. So I'm going to ask both of you, are you guys breakfast eaters?
Yes.
Kind of.
Yeah. So wait, Don, you go first. Tell me about breakfast.
So breakfast, I've been told, is a very important meal of the day. Yes. But I don't always get around to eating it, just depending on where I'm going.
Yeah.
So usually if it's work, then I go to work and then I'll grab something on the way, which is usually not really a breakfasty type thing.
Mm. So your first meal is usually like what?
I usually have like something like a breakfast bowl, like just a like piece of fruit.
Oh, that or something sounds like healthy. That. But, yeah.
Yeah, but not like a big, big breakfast.
No.
Generally like days like today.
Yeah.
So today we had pancakes, which is good.
Mm.
Yeah, so I mean, it just depends. If I can cook, then yeah. I'm happy to, you know, go ahead and cook in the kitchen and, you know, make up some breakfast.
Wonderful.
My two favorite are obviously pancakes and French toast, just generally across the board. Mm. But if I'm not cooking, then I'll just have like a muesli or something.
Okay. And what about you, Sammy?
I don't tend to have breakfast all that often. However, if I do have it, then recently it's been smoothies. They're nice and easy to make, and
yep.
You feel like you're being kind of healthy with having them as well. So
yes.
I quite enjoy that.
Well, I quite enjoy just listening to you guys talk. I don't even care what you ate for breakfast. It's just cool to hear you talk about it.
We want you guys to read us a book with two characters,
right?
So have an exchange of conversation.
Totally. Mm-hmm. So, hon, when do you think they first came on our radar?
Oh,
was it like a year ago? No.
Yeah. Maybe not quite that long ago. I don't think, actually.
Time has no meaning.
I saw you guys
anymore.
On Instagram, and I saw some photos that caught my attention,
yeah.
I think, before I actually tuned into any of your podcasts.
Well, and they've just always been supportive. They've mm-hmm. always lifted us up. They've always commented. You know, when you are a new podcast and you put out a link to your episode, a comment is like money. It's like, so you're so happy to get a comment, right? Somebody listened to
so
it
true.
Or somebody is promoting you. It's gold.
Especially if it comes from another continent.
Yeah. Especially if it comes from another continent and another podcaster. Like that's just real love. So we were so inspired by you guys and grateful for you. And, you know, we always try to lift you guys up too, but you guys started it by lifting us up and we so appreciate you.
Oh, no problem.
Yeah.
So where do you guys live in London?
So we're both from the south of London, southeast, I guess. And I'm from a little place called Croydon, but I moved to Bromley, which probably means nothing to you guys. But
I know where Croydon is. When I landed
amazing.
Because I took Air Norwegian there last time. So
okay.
Whatever that other airport that's not Heathrow.
That's
yeah, and we had to drive through Croydon to get to London.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, go ahead. I got excited.
No worries. And so, yeah, so I'm currently living in Bromley with my wife and my daughter. It's nice in the neighborhood, and I quite like it. So
lovely.
But I'm originally from Croydon.
Okay, and how old is your daughter?
One.
One. Oh, wow. A baby.
Yeah.
Okay. And then that was Don, right?
Sammy.
Oh, that was Sammy. Sorry. Don, where do you live?
So I still live in Croydon. I live in Thornton Heath in Croydon.
Okay.
And so me and Sammy are not actually that far away from each other. Probably, I'd say, a 15-minute drive, 10-minute drive, mm-hmm. 15-minute drive. And so, yeah, I mean, I've grown up here my whole life. My parents live relatively close by. We're probably thinking about moving sometime. I'd like to be a homeowner.
Yeah.
So just little things like that, but generally from Croydon.
Okay. All right. So I'm just wondering, how would you describe what it's like to be Black in London before these protests? I know that's a big question, but was it a big deal? Did you feel Black walking around? Was it, did you experience racism? Was it not noticeable? Like, what was it like before the protests?
So we've been particularly lucky, I suppose, in a way, because the area in which we live in and grew up in is a predominantly Black area. And so we've never had any real encounters with racism. I mean, there was some racial banter in schools where people make fun of you for being slightly darker than the other kids, but it was like Black kids taking a piss out of other Black kids that were slightly darker than them, kind of colorism.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never experienced somebody standing in my face, like hurling racial abuse at me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just because of the area that I live in and I come from.
Yeah.
And I'm a homebody as well, so I don't tend to travel all that much. I tend to do what I'm doing and then come back home.
So you're not like out there.
Right. And yeah. I think that the racial, what can I say? The racial relationships in London, they're very subtle. So from what I understand in America, it's very palpable. There's a long history of inequality and a conversation about race and racial issues.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the UK, we've never really had a lot of those racial issues addressed. And so I think in this climate now, a lot of the conversations around race are coming to the forefront.
Yes.
And we're seeing some very interesting things coming from especially the far right working class in this country.
Yes. Yeah, that was, and I want to talk to you about that too. So I'm sorry, was that Sammy?
Yes. Yeah,
okay. Hi, Sammy. So,
hello.
So Don, how did George Floyd's death affect you personally?
Okay. So I think in terms of affecting me personally, it was definitely a time where I started to think to myself, this has happened often, very, very often. And it made me reflect on my journey because as Sammy said, it doesn't happen exactly the same way in London. It happens very differently. And we have experienced it, but never like that. So blatant in the street, someone who clearly didn't do anything to deserve such, you know. So it made us think, what are the police in our country capable of, for me personally?
Mm.
And that was a very difficult thing for myself to confront because they've never actually done it in that way. So,
yeah.
You know, you would never see someone in London in broad daylight press their knee to somebody's neck. You would never see that. And you wouldn't see the level of restraint that there is in America because they don't even carry guns. However, it does happen. You see people tased by mistake or people would be tased for no reason. What would you say it was, Sam? Early 2000s? Did you say the Mark Duggan?
I think it was a bit later than... Well, yeah, 2000s,
later.
I think. Yeah.
Who was
so,
it?
So there was a Tottenham male... And there was this uproar. It actually led to the Croydon riots, which is obviously where we live.
Yeah.
And I don't know too much about the situation because my understanding is...
2011.
Okay, 2011. And what happened is the police, they fired at him, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
They fired because your policemen don't carry guns. right?
No, not generally.
Not generally, but they had a weapon they could fire at him.
Yeah, what, so, do you remember? They suspected that he had a weapon on him.
Ah.
And so they, because mostly police officers in this country who walk the beat don't carry firearms. However, if it's, we have an armed response unit,
I see.
They do carry, do carry firearms.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, yeah, they suspected he was firing the weapon and they fired at him. And I don't think they found the weapon.
Right.
So you can imagine that in terms of Tottenham, they were in uproar because this was someone who was clearly a figurehead to them.
Yes.
And they saw the injustice. And I suppose that's, I wouldn't say that's the first time, but that was one of the major times in London. And so when we see what happened with George Floyd, it triggers that we understand that the UK is capable of it, although it doesn't happen on the same extremity that it does in America.
Right, right.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Well, and then here in America, you know, I've lived through quite a bit of American history, and I've seen these types of protests after black people have been killed by the police. And usually they're pretty divisive or polarizing. People, you'll see a lot of black people marching, and you'll get a lot of pushback from everyone else. this one feels much different to me. This feels like everybody has a stake in this. Is that the sense that you get there? Do you feel like, what's it like to be black during the protests there? Is there a different feeling now that people are protesting?
Generally, I'd say yes. This is the first time, especially in my lifetime, that I've seen a multi-ethnic, multi-class, multi-gender movement come about.
Yeah.
However, and as picturized today, there is huge amounts of pushback from right-wing working class individuals. Mm-hmm. So there was a Black Lives Matter protest that was taking place today in London.
Mm-hmm.
And hundreds and hundreds of far-right working class white British individuals came along and were antagonizing the police, were antagonizing the protesters, singing songs like "We're racist and we like it." And so there's a huge, huge pushback from that community. However, most of the more middle class young people are standing in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement. So it has been quite divisive here, and it's going to be interesting to see the aftermath, whether this was just one gathering and people were getting riled up, or whether it's a deep embedded sentiment in individuals that has ramifications after this event. So we have to, as a black person in this country, now you have to be very careful and try and move very carefully.
Well, that's really interesting. And I'm actually startled by that. I didn't realize that the pushback had been that severe. So you describe them as working class, right-wing,
yes,
white people. Do you have much interaction with working class, right-wing, white people in general? Are these people that you don't usually mix with?
Not generally, no. But I do have friends who are working class, and they do have somewhat right-wing views. But it's almost a case as if a lot of them don't understand where the sentiment comes from, and they haven't had long enough time to reflect on it. It's just like a very easy way to categorize a dislike for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen these tactics being used from people like Oswald Mosley to Nigel Farage. They use this tactic of the them and us situation. It's like, well, it's not your fault that you're poor and disenfranchised. It's not the government's either. But you see those black people over there, it's their fault.
Mm.
You know, they're coming over, they're taking your jobs. Simultaneously, they're sitting at home and scrounging the benefit system. When really, if you take a more nuanced look at it, we've had massive changes over, you know, the last 100 years in this country. Technology is a massive reason for people getting fired from their jobs because the technology is cheaper. So you've seen a lot of factory work, which was really the hotbed of employment for a lot of working class Britons, and a lot of those places have shut down, and they shut down because they don't need humans to do the work that machines can do. It's far too expensive to, and humans are subject to human error. But you only have to sit down and think about that for 2 seconds to realize that your gripe is not with black and brown people coming over and taking your jobs.
Right.
But if somebody's pointing the finger and saying, it's them, we have too much levels of immigration here, and these people are the reason why you're the forgotten people. It's an easy rhetoric for people to get behind, and it just stokes the fire of intolerance.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's really interesting because as a black American who's descendant from slaves, I've never dealt with being an immigrant or being thought as one. The brown people in our country have a lot of immigrant hate, you know, directed at them, you know, the rhetoric there is you're coming to take our jobs, you know, go back to where you came from. People do say go back to Africa, but that's, you know, that's not realistic for us because it's been 400 years and we don't even know where we came from. So we're not immigrants here, for most of us, you know, like you, there's been an Afro-Caribbean influx as well, mainly on the East Coast. And I know you guys have that and from Africa, but yeah, I never thought about that. That's another like level of anger and hatred to deal with, aside from just being black and not being liked for that, than to have the immigrant status put on top of that. Have you guys gone to any protests?
I haven't.
So, no, I haven't been to any yet.
Okay. What? How come?
I've just been busy. I have a job that requires a lot of attention.
Okay.
We have updates very, very often. I was planning stuff for my wife and dad.
Yeah.
And doing the podcast stuff. So I just haven't had a opportunity to go out.
Sure.
Go out there.
Yeah.
What's
your job? Do you mind telling me?
Oh, sure. I say it to people, but they never really get what it means anyway. So I'm a clinical coding analyst.
Oh.
I think they have them in America as well. They're called medical coders or something like that. And so what my job is to do is to look at a person's stay within a hospital. And each diagnosis that a doctor makes, we have to turn it into a code. And it's the same for any procedure that they have also. And so, for example, if somebody comes in and they have tonsillitis and the doctor recommends that they have a tonsillectomy, there are specific codes for that.
Right.
And so we generate those codes and the operation codes so that the trust can get paid for doing it.
Yeah.
And also that we can use the statistics for research or improvement purposes as well.
I think you explained that really well. I totally know what you do.
Thank you.
So actually Scott and I haven't been to any protests yet either, and it's partly because of COVID.
And we've been really busy with the podcast.
And we've been really busy too, but also I'm still afraid of big crowds, honestly.
With the COVID thing, for sure.
Yeah, and we've been choosing to use our voices in different ways, by writing articles, us by doing, this podcast. But it's interesting to have this pandemic at the same time as this going on, because there's another risk involved.
But every single interview we do, this topic is an important piece of it.
Yeah, for sure. So are you guys hopeful for change there? It feels like the people you were describing who were the counter-protesters are not people that have changed their mind, that their minds have probably been made up this way all the time, but now they're being more open about it because they feel like they're about to lose something, right? That their livelihood or the way that they live is at risk. Do you feel like you're hopeful that there can be, some kind of balance there, that people can learn from each other and not feel the need to come out against each other? Do you know what I mean?
I think there will always be a level of uprising. So I think that it will settle. I don't think many Black people, Black English people, migrants will forget what's happened.
Uh-huh.
I think that maybe some will reconcile, but it won't be on the terms that people think it will be on. And I think it's happened over in historically, over periods of time.
Yes.
So, usually there is an upsurgence and then it goes down a little bit. I think people will still feel downtrodden on, and I think people will still feel angry inside.
Mm.
But they will understand that life has to go on, even though they dislike it that way. And I don't know whether that's a good or a positive thing. I do think there will be a level of change.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't think it will be what people think it will be. I think the main change will come from people supporting the necessary businesses that they enjoy. Also being very cautious to where they spend their money. I find that at the moment we just spend when we want something, we look and we just buy it. But I think generating financial capital for Black-owned businesses would be something that would help, the Black community grow.
I agree.
And I think by doing things like that, that's when, once we become a financial commodity to the people that we work with, they will then start to see us in a different light because of what we can do financially is that power.
Right.
So, and I think we've seen it, we've seen it over time, but just not a unity of it. So, for example, in Africa and in the Caribbean and looking at the resources that they produce, the problem is that because historically there wasn't such, we didn't really have the resources to protect ourselves, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I think now that people are going through the motions and realizing it in different capacities, because this is something that's going on globally, it's not just something that's going on in England and America.
Right.
I think there will be some sort of resurgence where people start to put money into Black-owned businesses and back what some people would call back home in terms of people who migrated.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Wait, was that Don?
Yeah.
Okay. And Sammy, what were you going to say?
Oh, no. I was just going to say, for a long time, we have not had a lot of conversations about race and stuff like that. A common UK position is, well, if you don't talk about racism, then it will just go away.
Mm.
And that's been a default position of many people in this country. But now, so I think you alluded to it in your intro, we had the statue of Edward Colston,
yes,
torn down in Britain. For me, the act of it wasn't nearly as important as the questions that arose from it. And these are questions that we've not had for a very long time.
Mm.
So, you know, we've had ideas around this guy, Edward Colston. He was supposedly a philanthropist. He gave a lot of money to churches and hospitals in Bristol. But he was also the head of a slave movement that, you know, traded thousands, I think the number's 84,000 African men, women, and children. And so the question is, does a society that claims to find slavery abhorrent celebrate this man with a statue?
Right.
Knowing that he made a significant contribution to British history, especially in Bristol, he's very well liked there. And so these conversations are very difficult to pick apart because it's two different people seeing the same person in a very different light.
Yes.
And so it's very hard to get somebody to see something that way. It's like, you know, what I've heard most often is, well, everybody was a slave trader during that time. And maybe that's a just justification. I don't know.
Well, everybody was not a slave trader during that time.
Yeah. And you make an excellent point.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that questions like this will begin to arise. So, for example, on Twitter recently, a lot of people are asking, well, how comes the police, the Metropolitan Police in particular, were so heavy-handed with some disgruntled teenagers during the beginning of what were very peaceful Black Lives Matter protests.
Mm.
And yet you have these right-wing, you know, working-class people throwing punches, antagonizing, throwing bottles, and the police are standing there doing their jobs and not doing too much of anything.
Yeah.
And so all of these situations are pulling out questions that we haven't had to have for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be interesting to see how we deal with them. I'm slightly pessimistic at this.
Mm.
I don't tend to believe there's going to be a massive reformation. I don't think that we're going to see a significant change. However, I do think that more people, especially Black people within this country, are going to start to maybe look into their history more. I've been on Instagram a lot, and I've seen a lot of people posting historical facts about ancient African kingdoms and conversations that Malcolm X used to have. And, you know, I'm a massive fan of Dave Chappelle.
Yes.
And people have been sharing his take on it as well. And so,
And so
I think these conversations and the knowledge is good. But like Don kind of alluded to, it's what we choose to do with it. You know, race is very interesting to me because being Black, it can be your everything or nothing. So when I say that, what I mean is some people can get into the trap by believing everything negative that happens to them is because of racism. And I've met these type of people.
Mm-hmm.
And there are others who really legitimately have a gripe, and they can see when they're being mistreated, and they can see where they're being judged, and they can see where prejudices are being pointed at them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I was at university. I used to wear a hoodie a lot and stuff like that. And my degree was in criminal justice. And I remember when we were talking about gang culture, the lecturer would always want my input. It's like, well, I can't tell you anything about gangs because I'm not part of one. I know peripherally, you know, because my area might have some people who are involved in gangs, but I don't know why you're asking me this question.
Yeah,
because
but you
there
did.
Are plenty of
Yeah, exactly.
And so you know, you kind of have to deal with those issues,
right?
And I don't think that I'm playing the race card when I talk about it. I'm very careful when it comes to, and I think most Black Britons are. I'm not sure about America. I've never lived there, but I think that most Black Britons are very careful about how they address race, and a lot of the stuff gets swept under the rug because they don't want to be seen as that angry Black person.
Right.
So we just do what we can.
Wow, both of you just said a mouthful, a couple of mouthfuls.
Sorry.
And no, I'm thrilled, and I wish that we had more time to talk more about it, because you just opened up so many subjects. Like, you know, the truth is, and I think, Don, you said this, the only color that matters in the end is green. You know, change won't be made until people are forced to make them because of financial reasons. And that's the unfortunate truth. And then, yeah, there are slavers here whose statues are being torn down, and people are arguing that they were good people who did good things. Scott and I were just talking about this last night. And like, but it's not a question of good and bad. It's like, is it right or is it wrong? Is it wrong to enslave people and kidnap them and, you know, separate them from their language and their culture?
And is it okay to, like you said, to put statues of those people up in communities today?
Right.
And ask everyone to buy into the story, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that those are important conversations. I had one yesterday with someone I grew up with from Virginia. I grew up in a very conservative place where they're taking down Confederate soldiers, generals. They're taking their statues down. And it's very torn, right? Like, young people see it as a positive change, and older people are seeing it as
the end of an era.
The end of history as they know it.
Yeah, sure.
And like you said, I think, unfortunately, change is slow. Laura says, I think it's true that right now there are voices being heard that haven't been heard
ever,
but that window will close.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's important to continue to have these uncomfortable conversations in a reasonable way and open people's perspectives, you know.
So, last question, guys. Is there anything you want to tell people in America about what's going on? Anything that you want to say directly to them?
I'll let you go first this time, Sammy.
Okay. That's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
I think my message would be continue to press for the right to be seen as a human being. Mm. Because a lot of the time when we talk about race and equality, the default position is that Black people are seeking equality with white people. And that's not what the equality I think of means. I think that equality is the ability to grow and manifest your truest potential without impediment.
Mm. I love definition.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And so I would say work towards that, and I will salute you and I will support you in your attempt to do that.
Beautiful. And Don?
I would say walk gracefully with your royalty and basically demonstrate your position, but understand what a violent position puts forth for you. So I think that in anything that we do as Black people, we should support each other. We should unite if the change is positive and we agree with the change. However, we have to have an understanding of everything that we do. And that, as Sammy said quite early on, is that if you decide to play the race card too often, they will completely discount your view. Because already some of the positive things that have been done have been totally negated. You know, and different spins have been put on it by the media. And so you have to find a peace within yourself where you can demonstrate your message and hold your head higher. And that's what I would say.
Beautiful. Oh, you guys, thank you. This is the coolest part of our week, maybe our month, to have an actual conversation with you two. Thank you so, so much for making this happen. We really appreciate
thank you.
It.
Yep. Yeah, thank you.
Keep up the good work as well, guys.
All right, and enjoy your families, and you guys take good care of each other. Take care of yourselves, and we thank you.
No problem. Thank you for the time. It's been an honor.
Thanks, guys.
Be sure not to miss our weekly full episodes and Scott Talks each Tuesday by subscribing to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. Join our Only One in the Room Facebook group if you'd like to ask a question of any of our upcoming guests for this series. All of us at The Only One in the Room wish you safety and wellness during this challenging time, and we'll see you next week.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.